All right, good morning, everyone. I'm Nick Reynolds. I'm the former head of operations for the KCR crisis team. I filled that role for the 2017 event, the crisis in Kashmir, and I returned in 2018 to train my replacement, and I was effectively the co-head of operations with my colleague Will Reynolds, no relation. So first off, what is KCR crisis sim? The KCR crisis simulation is an annual event run over the weekend here at the War Studies Department every February. It's a large political strategic crisis simulation for about 50 to 100 participants divided into committees and consists of a simultaneous multi-domain war game that was run by the ops team, a diplomatic and negotiations component between the delegates themselves, and a media crisis management exercise run by the media team, which simulated a media environment running journalists and editorial board into simulated news outlets. I, as a head of operations, was responsible for the design, the building, and the running of the war game element. The aim was to teach contemporary strategy through active learning, that is, learning by doing, known to be effective and something that I felt was lacking in the department through traditional teaching. The three simultaneous exercises were all somewhat broad brush, with the simulation designed to explore the complex nature of how these aspects of strategy affect and interact with each other rather than treating anyone in detail. The participants themselves, they were all students, not necessarily at King's, from any university, but they were at all stages of their education, including a small number of PhD candidates who might be late career. 45% of them were military or government in the past, which could range from a three-month internship or reservists up to field-grade officers. We were generally talking E1 to E6, or officer cadets to O3s. And there are plenty of intelligence personnel as well with significant operational experience. Mostly they were studying war studies, international relations, or law. And they generally had a land power bias with some exceptions. What this meant for us was that it was a mixed experience group of participants that was thrown together and then treated with equality, given characters that simulated real-world leaders and military personnel. They were knowledgeable, but they often lacked specific regional or military context for their role. And a lot of them brought very strong characters, which brought a risk of personality-driven committee dynamics. So while they were very, very well-educated and experienced, they could also not necessarily provide the context for the scenario, as they didn't necessarily have a background in either the military role that they were given or the region that we were simulating. So we had to provide it, and the scenario did have to be fairly detailed. So for the scope, what I'm going to talk about, I'm going to get into detail. Graham asked for warts and all to get technical, and I've answered the call. There's going to be some soul-bearing and airing of controversial game and scenario design decisions. And I'm going to focus on the development process of how we made improvements based on experience between events. So, the first KCL crisis sim that I ran was in 2017. We were simulating a Kashmir crisis between India and Pakistan. The operations, it was built at very short notice. It was therefore quite rough around the edges. We spun it up in 8 weeks. It was designed by two people, myself and one other, with five extra personnel on the day who had recruited and provided with some limited training. Most of them were ex-military or humanitarian aid personnel. But they weren't trained extensively in wargaming. None of them were wargamers in their spare time. I participated in the 2015 and 2016 events, however, so I had some experience as a delegate, and I kind of knew what I wanted to create. However, I'd never designed a wargame before. I felt that the media and the diplomacy functioned, but the wargame that was intended to underpin this was limited in scope. So I wanted to create this third pillar so the participants could weight their diplomacy and media crisis management with action, or have their actions influence, for better or for worse, their diplomatic position and their strategic communications, rather than just having a negotiation exercise, which is what I felt the previous events had fallen into. I was also keen on realism and scenario consistency. Many of the students who'd run it before were from an MUN background, and MUN crises often end up having the wargame elements underprepared, under-researched, and in terms of operation reality, they tended to lack ground truth and were less than serious, and I wanted to change that. The actors we had involved were India, Pakistan, United States, China, and a non-state actor group. We built a scenario around multiple crises or points of tension that were simulated to test prioritization. The main crisis was on the India-Pakistan line of control. But we had elements of counterinsurgency and terrorism. The Federal Administration tribal areas, Fatah in Pakistan, played a role. There was a Chinese naval exercise in the Indian Ocean, which they could have cancelled to avoid it going wrong, but they didn't, so it went wrong. And that we were looking at Chinese investments in Pakistan as well, including the presence of contractors as part of the Belt and Road Initiative. The non-state actors group were wild card. They were Tehrik-e Taliban, Baloch separatists, Jaish-e Mohammed, and Lashkar-e-Taiba. Something a controversial decision, but we felt it had to be. They had to be included as they were key parts of the regional dynamic. And the trigger for the overall scenario was a flood in Kashmir, specifically in Srinagar. We chose to de-emphasize certain crises or certain potential crises. Nuclear proliferation, we chose to essentially write out of the simulation because it would automatically become priority and it would have ruined the other elements. Likewise, anti-piracy off the Somali coast and the Afghan insurgency, although they do influence events, we felt they were of limited relevance and we had to draw the line somewhere. We also didn't include Russia. Now, it was a manual war game, but it was computer assisted, just from an informatics perspective. We had certain constraints when we were designing it. There was no phone signal in the rooms. If you're familiar with KCL, this is unfortunately something we couldn't change. And the informatics software had to be freeware or open source. The war game itself was a free Kriegsspiel methodology, and that's initially very, very pure, with very little framework around it. And the adjudication was centralized in the ops room to maintain a consistent ground truth, as opposed to having umpires floating around between committees. Instead, they would simply have a moderator who couldn't make decisions, but would simply help moderate their discussion. The intelligence that they received was based on adjudication, and it arrived in the committee rooms by Google Sheets. In addition, it was a scrolling feed. It was an essential element. And the operations team members themselves, we all had different fields of expertise. So I come from a land power background. I'm ex-military, ex-army in particular. Others came from the Air Force or the Navy. And it allowed us to confer and work together, all in the same room, to deliver the best outcomes. A friend at RUSI described free Kriegsspiel as fill the rooms with experts and then go on a best guess, and this is basically what we did. And it's something I believed in. I thought it would be a mistake to get too technical. So the war game was fairly conventional in that regard. However, with an exception, there were no rounds, no explicit limits on the number of orders that could have been issued by the committees, and there were no artificial constraints on player behavior. Instead, we ran an accelerated game clock, with time being slightly elastic to account for adjudication, but generally consistent. And the game running over Saturday and Sunday, 10 to 12 hours in total. Each hour represented 7 to 10 days of simulated game time. A week would pass for lunch and overnight, during which we could work through a backlog of orders and would consolidate events. So this was to create a sense of time pressure and to deliberately induce stress. However, while the air and naval events could be quite quick, most events ran slowly, so the time pressure was very much induced by the delegates themselves. We wanted to create an opportunity to manage time pressure either well or badly. The operations team, therefore, because of the lack of constraints, we'd be running at full capacity. The more we did, the more there was to do. We were just trying to adjudicate as much as possible. This lack of constraints, this was based on experience from the previous events that I participated in. I'd seen war games where the participants had been asked to behave realistically, but then this had been taken too far, especially with MUN. Adjudicators would sometimes prevent out-of-character actions that were actually within the bounds of realistic or a defensible interpretation of character behavior, which either pointed to a blinkered approach or a lack of research. So my aim was to test the ability for participants to frame their strategic situation to prioritize. I felt obvious constraints ran counter to the same, so I gave people a pretty free hand. The hopeful behavior I had was for committees and participants to reconceptualize strategic problems, hopefully in innovative ways. The freedom also created immersion in the scenario, and immersion in the character, and a sense of agency, influence, and power. So therefore, the ops team policy, we would never say no to them. Reasons for actions not being feasible were always given in scenario. A senior advisor considers this course of action to be impractical because, for example. And we always treat it as an opportunity to provide provide context and background information. If it was within the authority of a character to order something, and some were with authoritarian regimes, so had a lot of authority, And if they insisted against our advice, then we would allow us to go through and we would allow them to blunder. We would also attempt to play it out realistically rather than just punishing them with a worst case outcome. Guidance was instead handled by the moderators and built into the order system. So with our participant orders, we would instead ask them to sort of lay out situation, articulate their intent and their policy goals, not in the British Army sense of intent, their mission in terms of how they hoped it to be done, and some limitations or control measures. That's the gist. We had a few sub-questions, but in general, that was the basic information they had to provide. And we were trying to guide them into a ways and means constraints model of thought. It was an opportunity to exercise mission command or to micromanage for them. They could make orders as long as they wanted. And sometimes the microfocus was important, so we let people do this. In terms of the delivery of intelligence, I'm sure some of you are familiar with this quote. We adopted this as policy. Already in different rooms, the remote delivery of intelligence and committees being separated, this created a friction and a fog of war. We compounded this with minor distortions of the committee's intelligence gathering with a stylized delivery. So, for example, the United States would have very good technical gathering and a wide variety of sources, but variable human intelligence would sometimes fail. Other states would have difficulty gathering foreign intelligence but have good internal security. The data and noise added flavor and immersion. We also took a very storytelling, prose approach. So this is what it roughly looked like. We aimed for a sort of Anthony Beaver, Max Hastings style, condensed into vignettes. And the intel feed would cover condensed reports. Well, in any case. So the immersion was key aim, in any case. We generally did well on the military outcomes, and post-simulation analysis with Middlesai backed us up, but we had some help from RUSI. But the problems with Free Creeksville, it's quite subtle, and nobody really noticed, but we didn't have enough of a framework available to us. So what happened was Okay, well, I'm going to go straight into education. Okay, so there was a problem with Pierce Creeksville, basically. KCL crisis in 2017, we filled the rooms as experts and worked on best guess, but basically experts make mistakes, experts forget things, experts have tunnel vision, experts misremember facts. Conventional operations produce results for the participants to receive or digest, relatively simple, but when you turn to influence operations, counterinsurgency, requiring host nation support, operations with overt and covert elements, this would manifest in numerous ways, some of which will be delayed, incremental, or result in a series of effects from a single trigger, and appear different from the viewpoint of different actors. So what we did was brought in an element of process. Don't need to read all that. Basically, what we did was we would question whether the plan was thought through, whether it was feasible, whether it was properly resourced, and whether the secondary and what secondary or tertiary effects there could be. We basically ran off a checklist. Can you tell that we're in the British military? It bears some resemblance to seven questions. But by going through these processes, we could allow the order's outcomes to be reanalyzed to decide what the discrepancy and shortfalls between the orders received and the operation scheme analysis, assessment, and situation. And that way, we could determine whether the operation would go to plan and in what ways it would fail. In this way, a nuanced outcome with multiple knock-on effects in different domains could be generated. We also brought this structure into how we did some of our pre-scripted events and contingencies. So, the multiple points of tension worked well with the participants balancing and trading off imperatives. So we chose to accentuate this in future events. Data and noise also received a positive response. It was immersive, with the noise equally distracting, but also providing insight and context. Air and naval, however, we found were the most difficult parts to simulate. So for this, we reached out to other partners to help with adjudication, and to help with also providing that sort of background context. We also found that in simulation, international law and the UN were sidelined. So some people, despite the MUN presence, there was a lack of understanding of the law and the UN, and also an unlikely structural realist kind of belief that the international system is anarchic, and both the UN and international law are toothless. This isn't articulated very often, but it was evident in the data we collected. So we had to look at ways of imposing costs. And this fed into a 2018 simulation. So, skip forward a bit. KCL 2018 then, it started off with an oil tanker crisis in the Gulf. It was a Saudi Arabia-Iran simulation based around a Hormuz Straits being blocked. We used multiple crises again. We used, but we also used secondary challenges, mainly the Yemeni civil war and the spreading of Iranian and Shia militia influence in an unstable Iraq and Syria. And we also looked at progressive and conservative unrest in Saudi Arabia that hypothetically occurred at the same time. In both of these cases, we tailored the scenario to provide enough information for participants to determine that a situation was fundamentally containable, but also details that could lead them to come to a worst case conclusion about the scenario. These were elements we'd started to bring in 2017, and we felt they worked well in drawing out the kind of behavior that we wanted. So we accentuated that. To balance playability and realism, we found that we previously had been unbalanced. So our scenario slightly favored Iran in 2018. There was no internal unrest, for example, whereas the Saudis were heavily tested due to their sovereign wealth and their network of allies, the oil wealth. We felt that this would make Saudi Arabia less accountable to its population and its well-equipped military, strong allies, and deep pockets meant that it could throw resources at problems. So it made sense to test them the most. And then it was for the US and Israel to be inserted into the scenario, something that we found challenging in the Kashmir crisis with China. In terms of intel delivery, obviously we delivered a lot of intelligence, and because of the informatics improvements, most of it ended up being actually completely unscripted. With the framework we had in place and those improvements, we were able to spend most of our time adjudicating rather than dealing with information issues. However, there's still room for minor improvements. In addition, in terms of costs, we also worked in, one of the major challenges we found with imposing costs was people were often unresponsive to either dissent at home, plummeting public opinion, or civilian casualties. So in addition, we worked with the media sphere to build social media pressure from celebrities. Perhaps it's a little bit of a millennial thing, but we found new ways to impose costs. And also, when certain red lines have been crossed, for example, we had major issues with actors like Israel and the United States, who have a huge conventional capability. But in the Trump era, we have states that are sort of insensitive to international pressure, and looking at things very much from either a hard power or looking at things very much from a hard power perspective, and ignoring diplomacy, ignoring soft power. So other ways we found of imposing costs. Especially looking at a region where there was, you have layers of both tourist areas, which are very westernized, an hour's drive away from war zones. Israeli committee, for example, crossed several red lines, so they were hit with quite a major crisis in terms of public relations. And we found this was very effective in bringing people more into line and acting with restraint. Okay. So. Yep, that's all I've got in development. Thank you for your time.